City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Kelly Simpkins.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 356. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Eva Longoria.
And I'm Sofia Vergara.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That'd be a hot little couch talk.
That would be cute. Eva Longoria and Sofia Vergara.
Oof.
I have to say, last night.
Get that prison movie made.
Get that women, Latin women behind bars.
Wow.
Boy, we could get behind making that film, couldn't we?
Well, we could get behind in lots of ways. Behind is the operative word for all of this.
I know how you'd like to get behind. We've seen Sophia from behind. Hey, you know, we just came off the big Oscar Sunday night viewing, and what did you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down to the Oscars this year?
Thumbs sideways.
Okay, because?
Just because. Well, I thought the... You know, it harkened back, as you said, to like an older kind of Oscars feel. I thought Steve and Alec were very funny. But I'm bored by the speeches. I'm bored by the lack of anything interesting, thought-provoking, inspiring that anybody has to say.
Yeah.
I just find it boring.
Yeah.
For the most part, all the time. I don't know why we do this to ourselves.
Well, I thank God we can watch it on TiVo. Can you imagine the days when you had to watch it commercials and all and sit there for three plus
hours and
watch
it? Not anymore. I can't imagine that in any realm of TV anymore.
And, I mean, I think, honestly, one of the funniest things is to watch witty people Twitter throughout the thing, writing what we think. Sandra Bernhardt had some funny quips last night. But I thought it was awesome.
She did have some funny quips.
Is that guy had his head caught in a vice? I loved Neil Patrick Harris opening the show. I thought it was maybe too sophisticated for Middle America, but very funny for him. And I do too. I thought that the kind of the set and everything had a Jonathan Adler meets 1970s. The crystals coming down when they would say best actress was kind of evocative.
It
was the Martini Oscars. The crystals coming down were evocative of the opening of A Family Affair. If anybody is not, born in 1980, you won't know what that is. But I did enjoy that. And I have to say, the biggest exciting thing of the night was who actually went home with so many awards, which was Kathryn Bigelow and The Hurt Locker. I think an upset, but
big
it was...
A big high
or a big a low.
I did that just now, right on the spot.
Boy.
That is why... That's called humor, folks.
That's called queer
cast
quips.
That's why I'm unemployed.
Big a high, big a low.
Big a low.
She looked gorgeous, by the way. That woman
does
not age.
She is a tall drink. I know. I want to meet her.
I thought Barbara Streisand was not going to give her that award. She was like, I'll hold it. You speak. Barbara's still upset that she hasn't won it for the mirror has two faces or whatever.
I'll hold it. Yeah. Why'd she say I'll hold it?
I really thought they were going
to have... a woman has ever won that award and she wants to take her statue away while she's talking.
I really loved it. I kind of knew once Babs came out that she was going to win, or I hoped that she was going to win, but... and I knew once she won that the Hurt Locker was going to win. I was pretty, pretty sure. And that was just very exciting. Very exciting for...
It was not a very inspired speech, however.
No.
I'm so sick of the lists.
The moment was inspired. But the moment was inspired.
And she's...
She didn't really rise to the moment.
No, she did not rise to the moment.
Which is unfortunate.
At all.
She could have really taken
nervous.
It.
She seemed like she was not breathing and... That people are just beside themselves up there.
Yeah. Well, we expect people who are really good at being voyeurs and being behind the camera and not being front and center to be really front and center when we give them an award. And I just don't think she's comfortable there.
I agree. But the first time a woman wins an award like that in the history of awards like that is the 82nd year for the Oscars.
Yep.
And that's the speech she gives.
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah. Woman, put a little thought into that. Inspire some young women who have cameras.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, and the type of movie that she made, such an amazing, amazing film. So, folks, if you have not seen The Hurt Locker, I mean, really, it is a movie not to miss. And it's not a movie about politics. It's not even really about war. I mean, it's not about good guy, bad guy. Avatar's far more about war than The Hurt Locker, which is what's so ironic. But I was just really, really, really impressed with that.
It's a really brilliant film.
And obviously we have to give, big props to Precious winning screenplay, Sapphire.
Based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
A bisexual. That's what Richard Knight Jr. always says.
Bisexual.
That the whole title should be based by a novel Push by Sapphire, a bisexual. But, she was there. Monique was there. I mean, of course, the gayest moment of the night was not Neil Patrick Harris, nor the huge dance number, nor Mark Shaiman behind the baton with the music, but the gayest, or Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin in bed. The gayest moment of the night was, of course, Sandra Bullock calling Meryl Streep her lover and saying she'd like to thank my lover, Meryl Streep. And I thought Sandra's speech was really
She was great.
I think halfway through the show, you and I were talking about how horrible the speeches were, and I said, "Well, whether Meryl wins or Sandra wins, we'll have a good speech there."
That's true.
And it was true.
She gave a she's got some good character, that Bullock.
Yeah.
She really does.
Yeah.
She seems just like a class act.
I like her. I want to go hang out with her and go fishing.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
with
slang.
Three-legged.
That's slang for something I'd like to do with her and Meryl Streep.
Okay.
Maybe
you go,
simultaneously.
You go on, go fishing, honey.
Go on
get
and
your,
go fishing.
Get your bait. Get your lure. See if you can hook it.
I'd say, I can hook it.
Oh.
I can even take it off.
Don't say those words like that.
Right,
it just doesn't work on
it
you.
Work
I can hook it.
No, I can
it
hook it.
It does not work
no.
for you. No.
It doesn't work. I can't be impressionist based on a novel Push by Sapphire.
No, you cannot.
A bisexual?
No, you cannot.
Okay.
Bisexuals.
I really, it was the funniest thing of the whole night for me was something that happened in a commercial break and something that happened after the Oscars was, I thought the Modern Family charades ad, if people hopefully didn't flip
a finger,
it.
A pointy finger.
A pointy finger.
So a pointy finger.
And then the two gay guys in their tuxes playing charades and like touches his back. Brokeback Mountain. Really funny. That was really, really, really great. If you missed that, hopefully you can watch it on YouTube or something. And then Jimmy Kimmel afterwards really rose to the occasion as well with the Handsome Men's Club. Was quite funny. I don't know how he got all of those actors together.
That was not about the Oscars, though, really.
No,
so
but it
rising
was
rising to an occasion was like an after...
Well,
an
I just,
after moment that was quite funny.
I think Modern Family and Jimmy Kimmel both went, tons of people are watching television. We should do something really impressive. We have a captured audience, and good for him, because I thought it was really, really funny with Ben Affleck and Matthew McConaughey and the Giles, whatever his name is, from Brothers and Sisters and Sex and the City.
Oh my God.
And
he knows his
Josh
gay
Hartnett.
Audience.
Oh yeah, totally, totally, totally. I mean, it was just a really, really good night. But of course, Dame Helen Mirren. Damn, Helen Mirren looked
That's
great.
That's Dame.
That's Dame.
That was hysterical.
My favorite joke of the night, but it would be.
And there's damn Helen Mirren.
And there's damn Helen Mirren. Now, see, I would have said it like that. Damn Helen Mirren, you know. She looked gorgeous. And Meryl Streep, thank God you listened to my my podcast, obviously, and you looked smashing. She looked really nice, really elegant, definitely a step in the right direction.
She did. She was checking her boobs out. There were a few women checking their boobs out during the
Were
affair.
You checking their boobs out?
Well, as always, but a few of them checking their own boobs out while the camera was on them.
Yeah.
Stanley Tucci's thing for her was very lovely.
Yeah.
That was very funny.
Yes.
Spearheading a movement within the Academy to top the award. Counted 16. He's very funny. I thought he gave a lovely... There were some lovely speeches to those actors.
Yeah. Yeah, I really loved bringing it. And we were both going, where the hell's Michelle Pfeiffer been? She looks like she just gets just timeless.
She's in a pod piece. She's in like a one of those pod sleeping beds.
She does not change. And Colin Firth, how just handsome and dynamic is he? I just think he's so charming and good looking. And yes, and Tom Ford makes me feel a little bit like he's an avatar. He's just a little not human looking.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I'm sure you gay men all think he's the bomb, but
well, the tux was superb.
The tux was extraordinary.
The lines were superb. I want that tux.
Okay.
But his squinty-eyed, kind of, you know, freshly shaven coiffed.
Not really freshly
very,
shaven, just
very
manicured.
Automaton. I don't know.
Yeah.
We haven't seen his movie, so I will try not to judge him.
Oh, I hear it's fantastic. We are going to see that movie. So beyond the Oscars, not the only thing going on, you and I had a big week kind of culturally. And then also there has been so much going on in the news.
I don't even remember yesterday. What was our big week?
Well, our big week, we'll talk about our big week here in a minute, but let me talk about a couple of news items really quick.
Okay.
And that is that D.C., District of Columbia, has same-sex marriage has taken effect, and it became effective on Friday, and you know it's or actually sorry Wednesday, and it's just you know it's a huge thing now. Same-sex marriage, it's the sixth U.S. Jurisdiction, they can't say state, that now can perform same-sex marriages, and it really is. I mean, gosh, if you live in the Northeast, you just these states that don't have it are going to have to figure out with their neighbors how they honor. It's the same situation we have in California, but the tide has got to topple, because how can you have a couple that has some rights in one state and not if they cross the border, especially people who live in D.C. and seem to travel so much into Maryland, Virginia. There's so many areas so close to D.C. that not everybody doesn't live in D.C.
True.
Or if they live in D.C., maybe they don't work in D.C. So I think that's going to be that and California. Those two in particular are going to really start setting a tone. So way to go, D.C.
Way to go, D.C. And I'm just very, very happy that the homosexuals can now parade their homosexuality legally around all the Republican lobby pill people in D.C.
Yeah.
Very, very pleased about that. And it's one of six, isn't it? The sixth state or the seventh state now that has same-sex marriage?
I think it's the sixth. And then the other thing that happened, you know, you knock me over, but Joe Lieberman, who we don't know what the hell to think of him. I mean, independent Joe Lieberman, you never know what's going to come out of his mouth or how he's going to flip-flop. But Lieberman introduced legislation in the Senate last week to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know, there are so many people wanting this law to be repealed. And so many people now out of the Obama administration, from the Senate, and also from the Defense Department and the military are now coming out asking for this repeal. And, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen in the next, I'm going to say it's going to happen definitely in the next 6 months. I think it will be gone.
Why do we even need to bring that kind of legislation up on the floor? Why doesn't he just fucking sign the bill?
I don't know.
That's what I want to know.
And this is the question about, you know, Obama.
I mean, yay, Joe Lieberman, but you know, boo Obama. Just sign it. Yep. Pass it. Get it done. It doesn't need all of this time and energy spent. Just sign the piece of paper.
Yeah. Well, and especially when you hear last night, you know, thinking the with the Hurt Locker at the Oscars to bring this back around, you know, saying a number of the people who won awards, Mark Boal, who was the screenwriter, and Kathryn Bigelow, both said, you know, sent it out and what do you call it? Like,
gave a shout out to all the people.
Well, not gave a shout out, but no. This is in whatever. I can't even think of the phrase, but
the honoring.
This is honoring, or this is for our troops. And, you know, the 120,000 troops in Iraq, I'm the 135 in Afghanistan now. And you just, and how many, you know, the 5,000 that didn't come home and the so many that are wounded. And you realize we're talking about, you know, more than a quarter of a million people and of United States citizens. And you just think, why would you not want the support of anybody who wants to be a part of that fight? And actually, they're already there. So just don't put them in jeopardy of having to not be fully transparent to their fellow soldiers and also and to their officers. And many of them are, I think. I mean, I think many of them are. I don't think a majority of them are, but I think many of them do serve and people know. But, you know, the witch hunt needs to stop. And Obama just really needs to now do what he said he was going to do. And I mean, I think if 6 months is a generous long lead time, I think, for this. But anyhow, on our show today, we've got more going on in the news. And so we're going to tell you what's going on in the news, also in the theater scene. There's so much good theater. And this is a great segue into what you and I did this week. We were at the Harris Theater twice this week to see Stephen Sondheim mm-hmm. in a question and answer with on his 80th birthday. And then also we went to go see Sharon Isbin, the
Lesbian
Isbin. Sharon Isbin, the Grammy Award winning classical guitarist. And really just two great nights of the theater. I mean, I loved seeing Stephen Sondheim. I have been an old, he's been an idol of mine.
You are old.
I'm old. He's been an idol of mine for definitely more than a couple of decades. You're fairly new to having
I'm new
a
to Sondheim
about...
land, but I love him. Yeah. Love him. I have a new love affair with the musical theater giant. It's yeah. very new for me. It's
yeah.
lovely.
What did you think of him?
I thought he was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I wish the evening had gotten a little deeper in terms of more personal questions, more interesting questions. Mm-hmm. You know, as you said, a lot of it was new for me because I don't know that much historical stuff about him or the shows that he's done. But I wanted more questions from the audience. I felt like it kind of cut off unnaturally.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to hear... I wanted to hear him as a person a little bit more as opposed to telling all the same stories that people knew about.
Yeah.
And particularly talk about the only two shows that I've seen of his.
Right, which are?
Which are Company and...
He did talk about Company a little bit.
He did talk about Company a little bit.
He did not talk at all about Sunday in the Park with George.
Sunday in the Park with George. I always want to call it Making a Hat. That's the title for me.
Making a Hat.
The working title is Making a Hat.
Finishing the Hat, which is
Finishing a Hat.
And that's going to be the title of his new book, which they're going to put out finally.
That's exciting.
Knopf, yeah. And Sharon Isbin, who had fiddle player Mark O'Connor with her. What an evening that was. I mean, just extraordinary. Extraordinary talent and really a highlight of an event, I thought. So there's another great event happening at the Harris, March 25th. The fantastic Broadway starlet that she is, Christine Ebersole, Tony Award winner from Grey Gardens, is going to be there in a cabaret show. And Christine Ebersole is on the show today with us. So we're going to get to talk to her, and you'll be hearing a lot of her music, some of which will be featured when she's here in town later this month. So lots to do. Christine Ebersole on the show, so stay with us.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League, but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
Well, we call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great-tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
New York Governor David Paterson has stated that he will not seek a full term in office, but will stay through the remainder of 2010. Paterson, who took over when then-Governor Eliot Spitzer resigned 2 years ago in the wake of a sex scandal, is a same-sex marriage advocate who told agencies in 2008 that they had to accept gay marriage licenses from other jurisdictions for purposes of employee benefits.
Republican California State Senator Roy Ashburn, who has voted against gay rights bills since winning office 8 years ago, has been charged with a DUI, allegedly after leaving a Sacramento gay club. Ashburn, 55, who was with a male companion at the time, was charged with driving under the influence and driving with a blood alcohol level of 0.08 or higher.
Several members of the U.S. Senate have sent a letter to the FDA demanding it lift its law banning men who have had sex with men since 1977 from donating blood. Senators such as Al Franken from Minnesota, Roland Burris of Illinois, Kristen Gillibrand of New York, and Dick Durbin of Illinois have sent letters. In addition, organizations such as the American Red Cross have supported overturning the ban.
In California, Phelan Huhn, who has been accused of drugging, raping, and killing Dane Williams, told his ex-boss that he liked to pick up heterosexual men, drug them, and engage in sex with them. Huhn's boss, Billy Sherrick, told a courtroom that Huhn preferred pursuing straight men because they were more of a challenge for him. Huhn is charged with sexual assault and murder with a special circumstance of sodomy.
In Michigan, Thomas Hugel has been charged with performing unlicensed circumcisions. Hugel is also charged with performing massages and piercings without a license.
The number of claims involving men sexually harassing other men has doubled in the past 20 years. Men filed 16% of all sexual harassment claims in 2009, which is up from 8% from 1990, with male-on-male cases making up the overwhelming majority.
The openly gay brother of Rosie O'Donnell may run for Congress. Assemblyman Danny O'Donnell may run for Charles Rangel's congressional seat should the embattled representative not seek re-election. Danny O'Donnell said, "I certainly like being a legislator. I think I'm good at being a legislator. If a vacancy opens in the congressional district where I live, I will certainly consider it."
An American Public Health Association study has revealed that gays and lesbians who reside in states that ban same-sex marriage are more likely to have anxiety or to suffer from alcoholism. Gay individuals who live in states that do not recognize marriage equality are 248.2% more likely to have general anxiety than those in states without such bans. Those in anti-gay states are also 36.6% more likely to have mood disorders and 41.9% more likely to be alcoholics.
Don Wildman has resigned as the head of the Anti-Gay American Family Association. Wildman led the group for more than three decades and cited health-related issues for his retirement. Wildman's son, Tim, is expected to succeed him. The AFA worked to pass the Anti-Marriage Equality Initiative, Prop 8, in California 2 years ago.
In world news, the European Court of Human Rights has ruled that Pole Piotr Kozak was entitled to inherit his partner's tenancy agreement after the partner died. Although the court acknowledged Poland's amendment that defines marriage solely as a heterosexual union, it also decided that the state must take developmental changes regarding relationships and society into account. Kozak had lived with his partner for almost a decade. After the partner died, Kozak applied to succeed him as a tenant of the apartment, but was denied.
In Mexico, same-sex couples in Mexico City can now apply for marriage licenses as the marriage equality law took effect on March 4th. Mexico City is one of the first jurisdictions in Latin America to fully acknowledge same-sex marriages. Two same-sex couples have married in Argentina, and Uruguay has legalized civil unions and allowed same-sex couples to adopt children.
Members of the Vatican staff have been implicated in a gay prostitution ring. Police have reportedly recorded usher Angelo Balducci, who was in a group called Gentlemen of His Holiness, talking on the phone with a Vatican choir member about getting male escorts. At least one of the prostitutes was a seminary student.
Slovakia will hold its first Pride Festival this year in Bratislava, May 22nd. Slovakia will become the last country in the European Union to hold a Pride event.
France has become the first country ever to remove transgenderism from its list of mental illnesses. The World Health Organization and the American Psychiatric Association continue to list the condition as a mental illness instead of a medical condition.
In South Africa, officials are investigating rumors that an all-girls boarding school closed one of its dorms after students were discovered having lesbian relationships. Reports have stated that 27 students were expelled after two girls were spotted kissing and others were dating. South Africa is the only African country that has legalized same-sex marriage and has outlawed anti-gay discrimination.
In entertainment news, openly gay internet gossip columnist Perez Hilton passed a lie detector test In Touch magazine administered to him. Hilton claimed that embattled singer John Mayer told him that Mayer had oral sex with a man. Polygraph examiner John Grogan said, "We tested him several times on the same questions, and he passed multiple times."
Harry Potter actor Daniel Radcliffe has filmed a public service announcement on behalf of the Trevor Project, a nonprofit organization that helps LGBTQ youths. In addition, there will soon be a Trevor Project iPhone app.
Floridian Coco Montrese has been named Miss Gay America 2010, almost 4 months after the pageant was held in St. Louis. Initially, Montrese was named first runner-up, and Alyssa Edwards of Mesquite, Texas, was the winner. However, Edwards was stripped of her crown, allegedly because of business-related matters that conflicted with being Miss Gay America.
And out actor Neil Patrick Harris will star in Sony Pictures' Smurfs movie. Harris will play a soon-to-be father who will live among the blue people. The film is slated to start shooting in April.
And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hello, this is your girl Lady Gaga, and you're on the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of March 8th, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Remy Bumpo Theater Company presents Christopher Hampton's seductive drama Les Liaisons Dangereuses, March 17th through May 2nd at the Greenhouse Theater Center, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. Set in the salons and boudoirs of pre-revolutionary France, two high-powered friends devise a game to test their skills as rapacious lovers. For more information, visit remybumpo.org.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com.
Lifeline Theater continues its 27th anniversary season with a world premiere adaptation of Rachel Ingalls' postmodern fable, Mrs. Caliban. Runs Thursday through Sunday through March 28th. For more, visit lifelinetheater.com.
Hey, big spenders. Spend an evening with Chicago's top music and theater conservatories. Roosevelt University presents Vivid 2010, a night with the Chicago College of Performing Arts. Featuring four jazz combos and selections from the Broadway hit Sweet Charity. March 23rd at the Auditorium Theater. Reserve your free tickets today at roosevelt.edu/CCPA.
The Brother Sister Plays by out playwright Terrell Alvin McCraney is the theatrical event of the Chicago winter, says the Tribune. Three interconnected plays, which the New York Times raves, you experience something rare anew, authentically original vision. Visit steppenwolf.org for tickets to the Brother Sister Plays.
The Harris Theater hosts one of Broadway's biggest names in March. Tony Award-winning actress Christine Ebersole performs a concert of Broadway favorites one night only, March 25th. Visit harristheaterchicago.org. Tickets are going fast. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
Who's gonna kiss me? Who's gonna thrill me? Who's gonna hold me tight tonight?
Ladies and Christine Ebersole.
Why did I tell you I was going to Shanghai? I want to be with you tonight. Why did I holler I was going to Shanghai? I want to be with you tonight. It was just a little misunderstanding that a kiss on the cheek could patch. I need you so badly.
Two-time Tony Award-winning actress and singer Christine Ebersole returns to her Chicago roots next month. That's right, the Winnetka native has had a rich career in TV, film, and in theater. And she's an award-winning cabaret artist, having just earned the 2010 Nightlife Award for Outstanding Cabaret Vocalist in a Major Engagement. And hey, she is having a major engagement here as she comes to the Harris Theater on Thursday, March 25th. So make sure you get your seats now for the one night only show, and it's such a delight to have you on the show, Miss Christine Ebersole. How are you?
Great. How are you, Amy?
I'm good. Now, I hope that Big Noise from Winnetka is just something you sing around your house, because I would if I were you.
Actually, I don't sing that song. I think that was reserved for Bette Midler, although I have sung it publicly, but...
Oh, well, tell me about your childhood growing up in Winnetka and in Chicago.
Well, I actually was born in Park Forest, Illinois, which is the south side.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've just had just various stages of culture shock, you know, through my life. Going from Park Forest to Winnetka and then from Hollywood to Maplewood.
Yeah.
I think those are two kind of big culture shocks. But, you know, it's all, I had a, you know, nothing traumatic, had a nice family, nice mom and dad, brothers and sisters, you know. Grew up in Winnetka, had a lot of fantastic friends that I still have.
Mm.
You know, it helps with a sense of sort of continuity in life. You know, I'm just very blessed to have so many friends from so far back.
Yeah. What were the influences growing up here, though, that made you want to be a performer? I mean, obviously, you were so close to a rich, vibrant arts community in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's just, it's hard to really explain how one ends up doing what they do. I think when I was a little girl, I wanted to be a nurse, you know. And then I just, all of a sudden, when I was 20 years old, I just decided that I wanted to... you know, be an entertainer and an artist.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, singer, actor. So it just, it's hard to really explain, what influences us
mm-hmm.
as artists. I think it's just kind of, a lot of it, I think, is sort of what is in the hard drive.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how we come here, you know.
Well, early in your career, you went to New York and you had just some amazing success, being alongside giants, I mean, in the industry. You were directed by Hal Prince and On the 20th Century, and
right.
with Imogene Coca, Madeline Kahn in the cast. Eventually, I know that became Judy Kay. But, and you played Guinevere opposite Richard Burton in Camelot. Was it at that time that you went, wow, I'm going to have a career in this? This is going to happen for me. I mean, I would just imagine being alongside those people really opened your eyes wide and was a rich training ground for you.
Yeah, that was a great influence for me. And, of course, they were all great. They were greatly inspiring. But I never thought of it as, this is a ticket. You know, this is my guarantee. Mm-hmm. Because there really are no guarantees. I mean, that's sort of like a false sense of security, really.
Mm-hmm.
Of knowing, it's really, I think the journey of artistry and the journey of an artist is really the journey of knowing oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just sort of, the scary road that we have to take in order to be authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And to really mirror life in the truth of what it is.
Was that a scary time for you? I mean, moving to New York City and, trying to make this dream a reality, is that where you really
feel like you got to know yourself?
No, that was so full of naivete that it wasn't scary, really. I think that the older, I think when you get older, maybe it just, you know more, you realize more, and you have more awareness of things that I think sometimes, you know, the fear can set in.
Yeah. Did you battle stage fright? Because I know that one of the things people may forget or may not know about you is that you were a cast member on Saturday Night Live for a year, and I would think that would be one of the hardest jobs in entertainment.
It was difficult in that we had to produce a 90-minute show in 6 days,
yeah,
and it was live.
Right.
And it was also something, it was a new arena for me because I was coming from, I just gotten off the road doing Camelot with Richard Harris, who ended up replacing Richard Burton when Richard Burton took ill. But so I came from this sort of, you know, Guinevere world into this world of stand-up. It was, you know, another culture shock.
Right.
But it's so in that way, I didn't really have a lot of confidence. I think I had confidence in myself, in my ability as mm-hmm. as an actor,
mm-hmm.
but I really wasn't familiar with that territory of stand-up.
Right.
And that was kind of really what most people were hot. What that whole focus of was improv,
mm-hmm.
stand-up, and that wasn't where I was coming from.
Well, I know that for many artists, you know, finding a great collaborator is can really just be a gift to your career and to enjoying your career. And Billy Stritch, you've worked with Billy throughout your career. You have a couple of CDs with him, In Your Dreams and Sunday in New York. What has made that relationship so special for you?
Well, Billy and I met each other when we were doing 42nd Street. And we had always, you know, heard about each other, but never got a chance to work with each other, actually, until 2004. And for about 5 years, you know, I was working pretty much exclusively with him until last year I began working with John Otto.
Mm-hmm.
John Otto is the one that I've been working with in the last two years, or the two rounds at the Carlisle. He was with me, my musical director, last year when I got reunited with Scott Whitman,
mm-hmm.
who directed my first club act at the Cinegrill in 1997. And he was also partners with my very first club act in 1980, when I did Ted Hook's On Stage, and his partner, Mark Shaman, who was the composer of Hairspray, he was the musical director of that very first entree into clubs. So Scott and I have known each other for about 30 years. So we just collaborated again on a brand new show that just got reviewed today in the Times. And so it's a whole different kind of a situation. With Billy, it was sort of more of a duo,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we were sort of more like a duo, in terms of the style of how we were presenting the music, and mm-hmm. and this is really kind of a solo act.
Yeah, and that's the show that are you bringing the show that you are doing at the Carlisle right now to the Harris?
Yes.
Excellent. Tell me about the show. You know, what was kind of the themes you wanted to explore? Who are some of the composers that we're going to hear?
Sex, politics, religion, and weather.
I love it.
From the American Songbook, and also I'm introducing some of the songs from my new CD, which will be available when I get to Chicago.
Oh, great.
It's kind of gone to the printer now. It's a Noel Coward album.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, that I did with Larry Yerman, who was the musical conductor for Grey Gardens.
Right.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Grey Gardens. Did you know when you were a part of that project and you're rehearsing it, did you know it was going to be such a hit? And were you surprised by all the attention?
No, I knew that I was in a great work of art.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I sensed it from the beginning that there was greatness about it. And I loved those two women, and I was absolutely devoted to them and to their memory. And it was something I could, identify with on some level. I think mostly that she was a nonconformist.
Mm.
I think that's what I mostly identified with, to not follow the herd, which mm-hmm. she did. And she always remained true to herself. She was not, she did not capitulate to the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was something I felt was very powerful about her. And I identified with her in that way. So I felt that I was a part of this, great work of art. And I felt very blessed to have been able to do it and asked to do it. And, that the stars lined up for it to happen.
Yeah. Take me into your process just a little bit with a character like Edie. I mean, are you someone that once you kind of find the physical manifestation of a character, or is it about the voice since you are rooted in as a vocalist, or is it is there a certain piece that kind of anchors it for you, and if you can get to that, you lock in? Or are you truly going from the inside out? I guess I'm asking the outside in, inside out question, which means maybe nothing to people who haven't performed or studied theater. But I mean, essentially I'm asking, is it about a costume piece or a way you hold your body, or is it for you truly about expressing what the emotions of the character are?
I think it's both.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those things. I think that I studied a lot the documentary. I watched it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if the nuance and the personality and the spirit of Edie just became integrated.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost as if I stepped into her and she stepped into me.
Mm-hmm.
It was both of those things. And it was as if I was driving the bus, but I wasn't the only one on the bus.
Right.
That she was there next to me.
Yeah.
And then sometimes she would, take over. I mean, it's emerging. It was emerging.
Mm-hmm.
Things.
What is it like? I mean, very few people belong to the club of ever winning a Tony Award. 42nd Street, that was where you had your first win. And then with Grey Gardens. What goes through your head when your name is called? And was it different the first time from the second time?
I think so, yeah. The first time was, because it's the first time, you don't have any frame of reference in terms of the experience.
Right.
And the second time with Grey Gardens, it felt as though, I had climbed Mount Everest kind of thing.
Right.
Planted my flag in the summit, because I think part of the thing about 42nd Street might have been, again, the stars lined up for it to happen, but part of it might have been, just for all the years that I've been in the business, that that's part of what the recognition was about. And I think with Grey Gardens, it was the work of art that Grey Gardens was, that it was a different kind of achievement.
But a transcendent performance that I think many of us thought was unlike a performance that we'd seen on Broadway. I mean, that we had actually seen on the stage, that it was a rare performance. So I can't let you say it was just about the whole work of art, because your role in that was just...
No, but see, that's also, too, the style of it. It was very representational. It mm-hmm. wasn't a representational sort of musical style.
Right.
It was more representational acting, and that's why it was something that was kind of new.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was Edie.
Yeah.
And Edie was, it was almost like a channeling mm-hmm. that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know how to describe it any other way than that. So in that way, it was something new.
Talk to me about this past summer when you were in the hit Broadway revival Bly Spirit with Angela Lansbury. I mean, definitely royalty in the world of theater. How was that experience for you?
It was great. It was, I adored everybody in the cast. It was just really a terrific, fun time. And Angela is just kind of amazing.
Yeah.
You know, 84 years old and mm-hmm. just, you know, never missed a show.
Wow.
And so therefore, of course, being in competition with that, I couldn't miss a show either. So I'm not going to let her show me up, you know. So I never missed a show either. But I just don't, you know, she's really is such an unbelievable inspiration.
Yeah.
And Rupert was adorable and mm-hmm. Jane and Simon. Just, it was a great, great, great group of people.
Yeah, really, really was. Yeah. Now, are you happy toggling back and forth between doing a musical, doing television, you know, spending some time in a more intimate setting in a cabaret with an audience? Do you need that balance? Do you like going back and forth between the dramas, the musicals, the television, the cabaret?
Yeah, I feel very blessed, again, that I'm able to move between these mediums. I think that, you know, you need to kind of get your soul injection, you know, and I think that that's what doing something like cabaret does, you know, live theater, live performance in an intimate setting. It really, it is the most challenging, and at the same time, I think it's the most rewarding.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, because of the immediacy of the audience right there. You know, you're not once removed by the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different experience. And not that it's not fun to do television and film, and certainly the money is much better.
Right.
But it's not, you know, you get bored after a while.
Yeah. What are you discovering? I mean, are you discovering something every night with this show at the Cafe Carlisle as you continue your run?
Oh, yeah. That's just the nature of art, isn't it? I mean, when you're always venturing into the unknown, and particularly with music, you know, there's always, it's the nuance. It's the being able to connect the music to the emotion. And so that's always in the now.
Mm-hmm.
It can never be based on anything that you did before, because mm-hmm. then you set yourself up for failure.
Yeah. So you're coming to Chicago. You'll be coming with John Odo, who is your pianist, and performing at the Harris Theater. It's an extraordinary space, everyone. If you have not been, we've obviously been sponsoring a number of the events that are coming to the Harris Theater this year. Stephen Sondheim celebrating his 80th birthday, and they are calling this a Broadway series with Stephen Sondheim's Q&A for his 80th, and Christine Ebersole performing on the 25th. It's a one-night only engagement. Are there certain things that you want to do, Christine, when you come here? Are there favorite things that you have in Chicago or friends that you'll be seeing?
Yeah, I'll be seeing friends and family when I'm there, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of let them take me around.
Yeah. You probably have your fair share of taking them around New York City when they come see you there.
Yeah.
And what is on the horizon? You said the new CD is coming out. What is the title of the new CD?
Christine Ebersole Sings Noel Coward.
Oh, great. Wow, it's so exciting that Noel Coward songs and quips are starting to resurface again. Do you feel that they're, I mean, I feel like you're right on the pulse of that.
I really didn't know anything about Noel Coward. Michael Blakemore, who directed Blythe Spirit, asked me if I would sing these little musical vignettes to sort of introduce the scene changes and inform the scenes that were coming up. And so I got together with Larry Uriman, and we did these little sort of 45-second vignettes. And then sort of out of that came the idea to do the album. So it just brought me into this whole rich, gorgeous, gorgeous world of Noel Coward's music. I mean, it's so unbelievable how prolific he is. Mm-hmm. But the music is so deep. I mean, he really is very, very deep in his wit, you know. But he even with that, you know, he really, 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 really takes you very deep. And I just really appreciate that. But also, one thing that's coming up for me is I'm going to be making my first foray into opera.
Ooh.
The Grapes of Wrath at Carnegie Hall on March 22nd.
Wow.
Exciting.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. I've never done that before, so that's very exciting for me.
Who are you playing?
Michael Corey, who wrote the lyrics to Grey Gardens, wrote the lyrics to Grapes of Wrath with Ricky Ian Gordon writing the music. So.
Wow. Wow. And that's when?
That's March 22nd. So that's just a few days before I come out to Chicago.
So you'll be able to tell us all about it from the stage. Those of us who aren't in New York and may not get to see it. But hey, listeners, if you're in New York or can get to New York, that sounds like an event not to be missed.
Yeah.
Now, are you recording this show as a live CD at the Carlisle, this Noel Coward show?
No.
As a live CD too, or just recording it as a CD?
I'm not recording this one here.
Okay.
I mean, the one I'm doing right now? No, I'm not recording.
No,
I'm not recording that.
Okay.
No, well, all that requires money.
Well, it's really very exciting. So many things on your plate. And folks, if you would like more information on Christine, if you're not in the Chicago area, you cannot get here for her one night only show. Her website will be linked on our site and in our show notes, ChristineEbersole.com. She's on the Facebook and MySpace, and it will list her full dates there of the shows coming up, including the performance for Grapes of Wrath. And the dates still here in New York at the Carlisle. And if you are in the Chicago area, do not miss Christine Ebersole, a very special show, Thursday, March 25th at 7:30 at the Extraordinary Harris Theater. It's such a fantastic venue to hear music, to see dance. What a great gift to our city. If you'd like tickets here in Chicago, go to harristheaterchicago.org for more. Or to Christine's site for her shows, her schedule, her CDs, and more. Christine, thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to seeing you here in Chi-Town.
Thanks so much. I can't wait to get there.
The stars have lost their glitter. The wind grows colder, and suddenly you're older. And all because of a man that got away. No more his eager call, the writings on the wall, the dreams you dreamed have all gone.
So Kelly, it's been really great having you on the show again.
Yeah, it's nice. I'm a nice little filler. I'm like corn in any food product.
I like that.
I'm a nice
filler. We can
filler.
Use that now a lot after seeing Food Inc.
Yeah, we can. Exactly.
We can definitely. Are you, you know, we're getting ready to go somewhere kind of warm pretty soon here.
God, I hope
you
it's
and I.
More than kinda.
Are you excited?
I'm super excited. Boo Sierras, here we come.
Yeah, we're heading
super excited.
Heading down to Mexico.
Mexico.
And before that, we've got to have the big Gays Got Talent finals, and I hope everybody will come out on March 20th to Sidetrack. Doors are going to open at 1. We're going to start at 3. And wow, guys, do we have some amazing, amazing talent. Not only do we have wonderful singer-songwriters, Cary Grant, Sammy Grisaff, who is the quarterback for the Chicago Force, and Michael McBride. But we also have some amazing comedians, Bradley Thomas, the kind of punk performance art band Dan, the Amy Winehouse cover band House of Winehouse. We're going to have some burlesque, male and female. You know, there's just going to be a smattering of a lot of different acts, and so it'll be a very fun time. Plus, people can win a pair of tickets if you're just in the audience. chance. You'll be signed up to win a pair of tickets to on American Airlines anywhere you want to go in the U.S., Bermuda, Bahamas, Mexico, Canada. So you could enjoy getting away somewhere warm here in April if you wanted.
Nice.
Which would be good.
Smattering.
So what are you going to do this week, Kelly? Taxes?
Taxes. I've got to do my taxes this week. Yeah, that's kind of the big agenda. And hanging out with you. We've had a nice week.
Yeah, it's a nice week ahead. It's at least, there's no snow on the ground. Not today.
Not today.
Tomorrow's another day.
True that.
All right. Hey, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.